I'm going to do what I usually do on this show and just react to great ideas. And not actually have any of my own.
It's like, it's kind of like a hobo holding his hand over a fire, just going, I'll just stand here and hold my beans over the fire that you gentlemen create.
I like that mental image of the show is a hobo holding his hand over a lit match. I just need a. It's not much, but I'll take it.
It's enough to get me through the night.
Listen. All I got to do is get to Tucson, two more train hops, and then I'm warm all the time. So
it's like Midnight Cowboy. And then he dies on the way there. It's a shame.
Literally, he's been making a 10-year trek to try to get from the East Coast to Tucson. And he's like one train hop away.
He warms up his hand with the match just enough to put his hand down his pants. Ah.
And then he turns to the stick that he's been talking to for 5 years and goes, now that's living. Come on, Sticky. You can't say we don't live like kings. Warm hand down the pants. Come on, Sticky.
Happiness is a warm hand down your pants.
Web Comics Weekly.
Hey-o.
I think we'll just open with that.
Hey, Avengers Assemble. Who we got in the room today?
Hey. What we don't have is Scott Kurtz of PvPOnline.com, but we do have me, Chris Straub of Star Slip and Chainsaw Suit.
We do have that. We will always have that. And Paris.
And I'm Brad Geiger. I do Evil Incorporated at evil-comic.com, and I'm the editor of webcomics.com.
Oh, we got that too. All right. So we're doing that.
And Paris.
And Paris. And to a lesser extent, we have me. I'm Dave Kellett. I do Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com. And so that rounds out the three, the trifecta that you get today, the trilogy. I'm trying to think of anything that has tripartite.
The triumvirate.
Triumvirate. There we go. That's where I should have went with.
There you go.
Scott has a really good excuse for not being here. He's doing holiday family stuff, isn't he?
Yeah, his brother is coming into town. He had to get him at the airport this morning. So
I know he was upset about not being able to be here, but I know he'll be here in spirit.
Right. Well, actually, I think he was trying to dodge this bookend Webcomics Weekly.
He was, this topic.
Oh, God.
Got to figure out.
Actually been interesting to me because it brought me to a revelation. Not a revelation, a revelation.
What would a relevation be? Is that like a space elevator? What's a relevation?
Yeah, it's the relevator. From Starfleet.
That's just where you realize that all things are relative. A relevation.
The relevator is where Scott is at the airport. That's where you get your
relevation. No, you know what? You know what a relevation is? A relevation is, you know how Einstein described relativity, that a minute with a pretty girl feels like 10 seconds and a minute with your hand on a hot stove feels like 10 years?
Yeah.
What a relevation is? A relevation is
back to the hobo.
A relevation is 10 seconds with your relatives at the holidays feels like 40 years. So
that's 10 seconds. It actually feels like 10 seconds for me.
That was like 10 seconds for Brad Geiger Club. Felt like years. All right, so keep going.
Oh, it's oboe hand warmers. We had a shortened version of the show in which we asked, and I want to make sure I phrase this right or I parse this correctly. We said, you know, a lot of things are going e-books now. That, you know, with apps and iPads and all the iPad competitors, very much everybody who used to be strictly print is going into the app market and the e-book market. And of course, all of us who have been traditionally digital are looking towards that. And the question was asked, and please check me, so because I want to make sure I'm getting my head around this. Mm. How do we compete in the ebook market, since all of our work is already readily available on the web?
I think that the take was how if print can move to digital as their big push, their big new thing, mm-hmm. what's our big new thing? since we're already digital? Do we have an equivalent? Is there some direction we can all begin to move in that gives us something to look forward to?
And there was a point that Chris had made in the last show that a little bit got buried, so we should clarify, which is I actually agree with you, Chris, that I don't think that the niche book market is going away anytime soon, which for all intents and purposes is what we are. We're the niche book market. So I think it has to be couched in those terms, is that, like, it's not that books are going away or the type of people to whom we sell books are disappearing, but just that there is this new emerging market, and how do we deal with that as already digital artists offering something digital on a new platform?
Well, yeah, to unhelpfully build on that, it's imagine a hobo, and he's but this actually is.
And then I look across the room at another person. I'm like, all right, I'm there. All right.
Yeah. You are by the train tracks. No, this is legitimately unhelpful. It's the idea that when iTunes came out, that it was a big deal to be able to get music legally and easily at home. So rather than having, you know, I'm curious about this song I heard on the radio. Well, but I don't want to go to Tower Records and pay $14.99 for the entire album. I just want that one song. Well, now you can, and 99 cents wasn't too much to ask. And that's kind of the logic. I brought it up on the last show where I'm interested in reading that comic Super God, but I'm not interested in hanging on to the copies even. You know, if I like it enough, I'll buy the trade. But right now, I just want to read it.
Right.
I don't want to have the physical objects at my house necessarily. I'm just curious about it. I'd buy that online if I had the opportunity.
And that there are some books that almost intuitively you know you will never want a physical copy of, you know?
Like, right.
It's almost the I'm going to rent it from the library mentality. It's, you know you don't want it. You want to read it, but you know you don't want it, you know?
Well, it's like heavy metal. I want to look at the nudity, but I don't want my mom to find it.
I like the grown man living 1,000 miles away from his mom still in that mindset. You know I want it, but I know I don't want anybody to find it. So,
what if they come over and I forgot to put it away?
And if they just happen to go to the top shelf in the linen closet.
I like the idea, though, that the Friday night you're out with friends and they're like, well, why don't we just go back to Chris's place? And in the back of your mind, you're like, no, oh, God.
Right.
Did I leave it on the coffee table? No.
Mentally searching your apartment.
Right, right. You're doing the walk around the house. Oh, God. I can't take the thing back. Oh.
Oh. That's how that works. But that's
just to sidetrack us one more time. So I was curious about just the title alone got me the Super God book, and I read the sample online. That's an intriguing idea. I'm interested in that one. I do want
to read it. It is interesting, and I feel like, I mean, it's like Watchmen, but just expanded on that idea of Dr. Manhattan. Yeah.
But so here's my question about Warren Ellis, though, because I've read a couple of Warren Ellis short stories now. Where
is it Ellis or Moore who did that one?
Moore did Watchmen, but Warren Ellis did Super God, didn't he?
It is. I guess it is Warren Ellis.
Well, so here's my leading question was, why in every third Warren Ellis short story is it about Britain having had this amazing space race from 1950 to the year 2000?
That's always a starting point.
Yeah, it's always like he has like some space race envy where Britain should have had a great program but didn't. You know, like they got the good German scientists, so why didn't we have a good rocket program? And anyway, I don't know where I'm going with that. But I've noticed that in his stories that it's always like, and of course Britain was one of the three competitors in 1960 between the Russians and the Americans. It's like, well, no, you weren't. You really, guys, you were still kind of paying back those World War II debts, and you really weren't too much to do.
But in this one, we didn't have to, and we did fine.
But in the context of a story where we're creating superheroes, Britain was amazing in space and had all sorts of space stations. But anyway, I've noticed that now in his short stories, that every third story is like, Britain, a true power in space. Dun, da, da, you know, that kind of thing.
I like that that's the key that opens up all these doors.
Yeah. In the watch scenario of his universe, there in the what ifs, like, had Britain just been a space power, it would have been like, you know, free grain for everyone, power is unlimited, world peace breaks out, you know. All we needed was to have Britain as a space power.
If only.
That's one small jaunt for man.
They rewrite it. It's very text heavy now.
Yeah, exactly. I say bagels, more tea. That's one small step for man.
Yeah. Ah, racism.
Well, listen, we got a lot of email on that. And I mean, we got a lot of email. And a lot of it, I'm going to try to parse. And if you guys have one you want to read that you thought was particularly good or you know, showed particular promise, go ahead. I'm going to kick it off because I thought there was one that I thought was pretty good. And I'm also going to say that a lot of them fell along the same lines, didn't they? They pretty much said that we – doing extra add-ons. In other words, in the same way a blog supplements a comic on the web, they were saying that you should put in video, artist commentary that's recorded, work in progress as you're, you know, the same sort of things that we Ustream or you guys Ustream. Those sorts of add-on type of things, digital add-ons, like Adam Casolino wrote, the new Project Magazine ad, the new Project Magazine app on the iPad has me really impressed. It's very reminiscent in style and format to a traditional magazine, but with small touches that can be done in this new medium. For example, integrated video for the cover. It's similar to a website, but because it is packaged in a single download, it can be viewed over and over again without worries about stream or connection. Plus, again, the format doesn't look like a web page. In other words, it's more of an integrated kind of experience.
Right. Like, you guys have seen the Wired app, right, for the iPad, for example?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I mean, yeah, it's a similar idea.
Yeah, I think that they do it better than most in terms of. I mean, clearly they have a dedicated designer who works on the line, the layout and integration of some of those, you know, embedded media forms, because it just looks really slick on their app. But yeah, so Brad, what was your thought about that? Follow up on that. I'm sorry.
No, I like it. I've got a further thought about all of this stuff, but in terms of that one specifically, I think it's dandy. And I think like some of the other ones went like this. You could index them. In other words, if I want to see a star slip with Jinx and a paradigm, or how's it pronounced, Queen or Quine?
I think Quine.
Quine, Jinx, yeah. And Quine. I can do a search.
Just like improved indexing of the strips.
Yeah, and that came from Bryant Garrigus.
Well, let me actually. I noticed a lot of them were like that, and while that's a good idea, I don't feel like that is. I mean, it's a good idea, but not in the spirit of that parallel to from print going to web stuff. And then granted, it's easier for them to do it. They've got the material. It's being printed. All they have to do is scan it and they put it online and they can repackage it. So they're repackaging existing stuff. I think that I don't know what that would add to being able to draw new people to it or making it more what am I trying to say here?
I think we're both asking that too.
Well, hold on a second. Let me center myself. I'm on the train tracks. I got one bandana.
It's the big game. Oh, you're on the hobo metaphor still.
Got
I like
your
that.
Match.
Right, exactly.
You've got a match in hand and a happy thought in your head.
I got a tin can hat and a metal spork. No, it's the idea that you can't when you. We don't have the same direction that we can go in. There's no internet for the internet where we can just say, well, I'm just going to take my content and repackage it for here. A lot of people suggested monetizing or finding a way to monetize the stuff we're already doing, which I like. Things like doing commentary, doing videos of the drawing of the strip, because we need to do that anyway. We may as well get something out of that.
Right, right.
But the project app is the best way I can think of where you can sort of try to turn this into a cohesive whole, as opposed to why not make a 99-cent game app featuring your characters, stuff like that. Like, well, that's not going to – I don't feel like that's going to take off.
Right. And it's a
lot of additional labor. Yeah.
It's a lot of development work. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, the one idea that I saw that I got intrigued by and then went, oh, wait a minute, no, was the idea of offering, if readers wanted it, a super high res version of the strip that they could zoom in on and really see what Cutter's reaction was like on a really detailed panel or something. And my immediate first reaction was like, oh yeah, that's a great value add. And then I was like, oh, wait a minute, no, the one thing that I never want to give out is highly reproducible versions of the strip. You know what I mean?
Right, because then somebody could buy that and produce their own printed book.
Yeah, and that's it's two steps away from some publisher in Norway going, he'll never find out about this, and translate, you know, like that sort of thing.
Right.
Right.
And also that I mean, Zuda Comics tried to find a solution around that where they wanted to provide a high-res, but you had to look at everything through their reader, mm-hmm. which I thought was really difficult. I mean, I don't like having to look through this little porthole to read comics.
Right.
So I don't know that there's a good way to deliver that yet.
Well, so let me throw this out at you this way, and you can tell me whether this is profound or ignorant. Having this conversation, the more I read these emails, the more I looked through this stuff, made me very, very – it gave me a sense of nostalgia. And what that nostalgia was this is exactly where we were in 2000, 2001, 2002 when it was very clear that webcomics was going to be a thing. And we were asking ourselves, okay, if we're going to make this a business, how are we going to be able to monetize this thing on the web? And that's where we got things like the Infinite Canvas, and that's how we got things like animated GIFs. If you remember some of the comics that were done with animated GIFs, there was a comic, in fact, I think there was a syndicate behind it, where you had to mouse over the last panel to get the punchline.
Weird.
Yes.
Remember? Yeah,
for better or for worse also had slightly versions of that where there was half animated, half reveals. Yeah.
I remember that.
They were
blinking,
yes,
was what it was.
It was the creepiest thing ever.
It was incredibly creepy.
It was like press in comic strip form. Yeah.
And there was all of these kinds of ideas, putting sound in, you know, putting sound wave files into the site and into the comic. And which is how a lot of us found out very quickly that most of the people who are reading our comics are reading at work and don't really appreciate us blowing their cover. And you know what we found out over the course of the years? You know what really helped us monetize our comic? Doing a really good comic. We didn't need any of that other stuff. Having it on the web was simply a distribution method, and we were able to find very – pardon the expression, traditional means of monetizing that website through doing things that we've been doing that have been done in comics since they began, monetizing through licensing and merchandising and so on and so forth. So that's how I kind of look at this. In other words, certainly I can do an app or an ebook of Evil Incorporated, and I can add the video tour of my new studio that I recorded, and I can put an audio commentary instead of doing a commentary like I would in my collections. I can do all sorts of things, but I really don't need to do any of that if I'm doing a really, really good comic. Because if I'm doing a great comic, people are going to want to buy it in ebook format just because they want to collect it in this new format. Now is that hopeful thinking or not? I ask you.
I'm noticing that all I've got so far on this show has been, well, that's not good. I don't like that one. But I don't have I'm not actually generating anything. I'm not contributing. The thing is that, like, if you are doing a good comic, yes, but then what's that next avenue? You know what I mean? Or is the idea that we create a channel via which even a, you know, like a middling comic can also get a little extra excitement. You know what I mean? You take away the barrier to receiving it, I guess, is the big push for taking print stuff and putting it on the web. Now I don't have to go to the comic book store if I'm curious about this book. But our stuff is already free. you know? And it's the good ones that have gotten that traction, where the middling ones, there's no curiosity to be sated beyond, well, I went to the website and I didn't like it.
Right. There's no new marketing or pitch that's going to save it if it's already not generating interest, right?
Right. And I can see stuff like background, behind-the-scenes material, additional material potentially. I don't like to necessarily walk down that road because, you know, it's like make commentary on your comic that's actually more compelling than the comic. Like, you don't want to do that.
Right. Yeah, well, right. And I mean, there was that time for a little while when a lot of people were putting books out that had the commentary underneath each strip. And in fact, I did that on a collection I did. And it's horrible. It's a really, really terrible reading experience to read the strip.
It can break the flow up.
And then to read. Yeah. It really ruins the experience.
Yeah. Well, you know what it does? We've talked about this before. It takes away that suspension of disbelief where you're in the world. Now you're in the author's world. You're back in the world. Then you're in the author's world again. You know, I think that if you're going to dive into a strip, you want to dive into it. I want to believe that Opus is real for 40 pages, you know?
Yeah.
Plus, I think there's a guilt in doing that kind of commentary where when I've tried in the past, you know what, this book should have some commentary. And then this strip is interesting to me because XYZ. And then I go, you know, 50 strips without a thing to say. Right. So now I'm just saying things to say things so that there'll be something beneath in the caption. Well, here, I remember being grumpy today. Right. Well, yeah. Well, that doesn't matter. Right. I don't want to read that.
But before,
what are you going to say?
Before we go further on, though, Brad, I want to acknowledge your insight about where we are, because I think actually that you are right. I think that it's that same sense of, well, I know I got to experiment, and I know that certain paths are going to open up, and certain ones are going to obviously shut down in this new venue. But that ultimately it's the work that's important. So, but there's that sense of, you know, okay, but experimentation is going to happen, and business solutions are going to arise. And that you're right that that's exactly like 2001, 2002, that sort of thing. And the corollary to that is I think, and this is me just admitting my own business cowardice, is that I think I will do now exactly what I did then, which is to watch 40 or 50 other people try and fail different aspects of things and then figure out which one I can best monetize.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that.
No, that's just me being honest. I think there's some wisdom to the Japanese corporate model of, okay, I'm going to let other people patent a lot of things, but then I'm going to license those patents and I'm going to make a hell of a lot of profit off of this stuff. So I like the idea of other people taking the lead on experimenting because I can go, I can do what Chris did from the show, which is no. But you know what I mean? Like better that than wasting 6 months on some book app that was like, oh, that was a dumb idea, you know?
Yeah.
I'm advocating cautious cautious espousal of totally new and untested venues, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I guess what I experienced last week when we were talking about this was a certain degree of fear in that, oh, no, now everything's going towards the apps and all of our stuff is already free. How are we going to monetize with an app? And I think you have to almost turn that on its ear and say, listen, that's just one more way, one more potential source for me to monetize my comic, and it gets into where I've said in the past that I think this app thing represents a swing of the pendulum towards publishers, and I still think that's true. I don't think maybe it's quite as bad as I originally thought it was going to be, and I'll tell you why. Somebody has written and wrote me on Formspring and said, would you guys ever release How to Make Webcomics on an ebook?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about that, and I said, no way. At least that's my – and obviously there's four of us together, but my personal opinion – no way. That book sells amazing. Supposedly, it's going to be out in mid-January for its third edition. It has sold tremendous. We make a very nice profit on it. We wouldn't be making beans on an ebook in terms of the profit.
But do you think that's true? Or do you think that a reduced price ebook would get
would
more
sell
the people
50,000, yeah.
Right, more of the people who are like, I'm not going to spend $12 on a thing, you know, but they might spend four. to, you know.
Yeah, but that, I mean, well, there's also an aspect of, yeah, that's four, but it's also split four ways.
Yeah.
You know what
Can
I mean?
Can I tell you the conversation?
But I want to go all the way with this.
Okay.
The main part of why I feel that way is because I'm not paying for the printing costs of that book. Mm. Images. Now, if I were talking about Evil Ink, where I would want to release an ebook of one of the Evil Ink graphic novels, see, now I'm a lot more likely to make an ebook because if I sell that ebook, that's printing costs that I don't have to incur. So that makes that small amount of profit that I made on the ebook that much more significant. That's not only profit, but that's cost I didn't have to spend for that unit. Right. So I can afford to perhaps throttle back on the amount of books that I've printed, knowing that a certain amount of my stock is going to go out in ebook format that I have no costs or low costs on. And in that respect, the whole app thing favors, once again, the independent publisher. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was having a hard time getting there.
No. I'm glad you finished that off. Because I was just going to be sarcastic anyway. You had... No. I was going to be sarcastic of one particular point because you said, and I don't want to do an ebook because we make a good profit on that book. And you stepped it back. You and I appreciated the way you did it.
I didn't want to sound like
with How to Make Web Comics, we make a nice profit on that book. It was the Midwesterner that didn't want to be prideful.
I didn't want to put on it back.
You clearly stepped it back. Like, well, we're all driving around our Porsche, our Hondas, and we're.
I don't even have a car.
I just don't take a horse.
But I just don't believe in them.
Brad, I agree with you. You know what's funny? People ask me about the ebook format too with How to Make Web Comics, and it's. This is going to sound even worse than Brad's very intelligent point, which is that for me, it's the path of least resistance. And one of the things about webcomics is that, you know, it's that thing of 20% of your work will get you 80% of your profit, you know. Mm-hmm. And for us, like, that work on that book is done. It's complete. There's nothing else to be done, and it's still selling. So why would we reinvent the wheel on that? And I can't really say that to readers that ask about ebooks, but it's like – it's already doing fine. I'm moving on to other projects now, you know.
Right.
And I think that there's a lesson even in that for webcomics is that don't keep trying to polish up even something that's working. If it's working, move on to the next thing, you know.
No, yeah. I agree 100% of that.
Because, like, none of us are champing at the bit to go back and work on that, you know. Fine, let it go. That was a callback for anybody who listened to episodes 39,
46. That could still be called on talk show. Because this comes up from time to time, as long as we're on a little bit of a tangent. The early webcomics weeklies can be found on TalkShoe, SHOE.com. If you do a search for Webcomics Weekly, the rest of them are at Libsyn, www.libsyn.com. I see that come up in conversations from time to time, so maybe this is a good place to put that information.
Right.
Yeah, we didn't start with an arbitrary number. It's saying, when are we rebooting it from show 44?
So what else? I mean, I think have we sewed that up pretty good? I mean, there's lots of really good ideas that are worth going through. People have all kinds of neat little kind of like side things, but for me, it's just that it's side.
I guess.
Thing.
Well, yeah, it speaks to how difficult it is to. It's almost like in the next 3 days we have to come up with an idea that's as lasting as the light bulb. Like,
right.
How can we do that? So everything we've seen is sort of just a tweak or a little polish on what's existing.
Yeah.
You know, there is no other internet for us to migrate to.
Although I will say this, and this is an idea that that seems to have grown naturally out of all this. If you're you streaming while you work, and if you have a blog, and if you're doing a daily comic, and you're posting on Twitter, and so on and so forth, might it be a good idea that when you build this app or if you build an ebook or some kind of thing that gets read on these devices, wouldn't it be a neat idea to, instead of just collecting the comic strip or the graphic novel, to collect everything that you've done that year? Your entire Twitter feed, for example, all of your Ustreams, the entire blog, and all of that stuff, so that basically what they get is 1 year's worth of what you did in all of the different formats you did, and offer that.
I think that's intriguing, but it's funny, my damn sarcastic mind, when you said collect everything you did that year, it's like Twitter posts, blog posts, stool samples.
That's like, exactly where I went. Consistency.
Let's get it all. Oh, clearly he had corn that day. All right. God, that was an unnecessary joke. God, I'm mad at myself for that joke. That was so base. All right.
It's so softball.
I had my 4-year-old in the studio with me for the last 2 days. He's not here today, thank God, because I was getting nothing done around here. And mainly because he had an intestinal virus and he was having some, you know, trouble with that. So he was staying with Dad. But stool sample brought me to Max, and Max brought me to last Friday when I had both kids in the studio with me, and I was finishing up some work. I picked him up from school, brought him back to the studio, and my older son, 8 years old, has for the first time expressed an interest in wanting to read my comic. And mainly it came from – there's a friend in the neighborhood, and his friend's mom wanted to read the books. So I gave her one of each books, and she was reading them, left them lying around. The little boy started reading them and expressing how he enjoyed them. So Alex looks at me and he says, "How come you've never given me any books?" And I'm like, "Aww. Well, the house is littered with them. Pick one up and read it, you know." But I made a point when he came to the studio, I went up to the storage shelf, picked one out just for him, and said, "This here, you can start off. Here's your first book, you know, blah blah blah." And we had a really really beautiful moment where I'm at the drawing desk. Max is sitting playing quietly, and Alex is reading the first Steve O'Link graphic novel and giggling every couple of pages, and looks up at me and says, "Dad, you're so funny. You're so good at this, Dad." Reading through the pages, you know, and it was like the one of the warmest, most affirming moments ever. Only to be followed by this. I've also in the studio have because I'm just enjoying being able to put up stuff in the studio. So I've got the cover of the fifth Evil Inc. annual report framed hanging by my drawing desk, because I really kind of liked how that turned out. I think Ed did a real extraordinary job coloring it, and I just like it as a piece of art. And Maxwell says, "Dad, how comes there's girls on all the covers of your books?" Cut to Alex, without looking up, flipping through the pages of the book he's been given. He says, "He's obsessed with them."
My dad's got a problem. Oh. Disgusting.
It was like, I said,
"Girl crazy.
You will be too."
That's amazing.
What good are they? You can't play Transformers with them.
They barely know all four of the turtles. I mean, come on.
Come on, really?
Really, Dad? Jeez. Well, you know what's just happened, though, Brad, in that last week, is that Legacy Strip, that's what's just been created.
Tell me about it. They are both very interested in starting a comic. And if you ever read my Twitter, every now and again, I'll write things that they've said. And I really am – one of these days, I'd love to start a comic with them. And now I understand the Legacy Strip thing. I think – because it's something – I don't think I'd ever want them to carry on my work. But I if they went into comics, if they decided that it's something they wanted to do, it would really give me a sense of joy. And Max was driving home that Friday. He's like, "Well, I want to be a cartoonist too." And I said, "Hey, boys, I'm telling you, you know, we could rent out the studio space on either side of mine, knock down the walls, and we could just." And I'm hearing myself saying all the it, and it's just as bad as the football player dad who was a quarterback in high school. You know, my son, he's going to throw a football. And it, you always cringe when you hear that because the kid should grow up to be what he wants to be. And I get that. And I try very hard not to make them feel like they have to do comics to win my approval. There's tons of ways to win my approval. But it's so easy to slip right in and go, yeah, wouldn't that be great? Geiger and Sons Publishing. We'd knock out the studios on the other side. We'd hang out all day making comics and throwing paper airplanes at each other. And I don't know. This fatherhood thing, it kind of screws with your head.
No, Brad, I've had similar thoughts because in my younger, headier days in my 20s, I used to get so mad about legacy strips that they were holding up all the slots on a newspaper. And that's more the fault of a limited slot medium, you know, like because there was only 20, 30 slots on the page, of course that becomes intrinsically unfair to anybody new who's trying to start a career. But ultimately, there's nothing wrong with if a strip clicks with an audience, which is impossibly hard to do, you know, statistically, to want to have it continue with your kids. So
provided that your kids want to do it.
Well, no. I mean, like, you know, I'm saying in this scenario where all the stars align and they want to do it, you want them to do it.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is as I get older, and also as my own career has absolutely no bearing on what goes on in newspapers anymore, it doesn't bug me at all anymore that they would want to do that, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I guess I say I get it now, you know?
It's just the stuff where it seems like there's a dishonesty to it, where it's like, you know what, why is there a reason to quit Jeez, I can't even name Gasoline Alley. We still need it. We don't really, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and evidently we don't need Brenda Starr either. I think last week decided that they're going to stop producing that one.
Yeah.
But you know, and then, you know, I was at, was it New York 2 years ago, somewhere on the East Coast, and I was on a panel with Tom Wilson II. And obviously,
right.
Tom Wilson was the guy that created Ziggy. And I was prepared to really dislike this guy because of the legacy strip thing. And you know what? Number one, just on the fact that he's a likable guy and he's a nice guy, you couldn't not like the guy. But then he starts talking about being and it comes right back to fatherhood, being about the age my oldest son is. And being at a restaurant waiting for the food to come, and his dad flips the paper mat over and played this game with him called Get Ziggy Out of Trouble. And he would draw Ziggy in a predicament or some kind of dangerous situation. Piano's about to fall on his head, or he's
Ziggy
hovering
in a pants store.
This is what I found so brilliant. Then he handed the pen to his son and said, you've got to draw your way out of this. You've got to solve this. You've got to save Ziggy one way or another. And I will give you points based on not on whether you saved him, but on how creative you were.
Huh.
So you couldn't just – if he was down a well, you couldn't just draw a ladder. That would be 2 points. You got him out of the well, but geez, a ladder, anybody could have – it was all about the creativity. And he says his dad used to play that with him constantly. And he said – in a way, he was training me to take over the comic. I was born for taking over this comic because he was instilling in me his own sense of creativity.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. Except that when the sun failed, it was like, you killed Ziggy. He's dead now. His body's at the bottom of the well.
Can I tell you, Chris? I know you well enough. I thought
the puppy down. Now it's a corpse-sniffing puppy. And the parent is going to be distraught. No one is going to get greeting cards from American Greetings. It's all over, and it's all because of you. Waitress, bring me the check!
Chris, I honestly thought you were gonna take a much more jerk path in that response. We're gonna go, well, that's great, except neither one of them applied it to Ziggy.
These are very funny. Why can't the comic strip be like this?
Wow, what was that tone you hit, Brad? You broke glass in the background. That was amazing. You went, ha ha ha! That was amazing. Anyway. But yeah, I guess I have some thought is that, oh my God, giggle machine. is that I can see now that it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if my daughter wanted to continue the strip, you know, I guess is what I'm saying.
If it was from a pure motive of I like it and I can do it and it's and I want to do it. There's nothing wrong with that.
And the person that changed that for me was getting to know Jeff Keane of Family Circus, because it's like you are Jeffy in that strip, so you have every right to want to continue to do it and draw it. And these are your brothers and sisters, and this is your dad, and you know, so it I don't know. I get it is what I'm. Regardless of what you're what are you laughing?
It's like he takes over the strip, and now Jeffy's got a goatee now, and he's got a motorcycle. He's kind of the cooler one now.
Suddenly, Billy's the asshole, and
everybody's kind of looking up to him.
Who's following the dotted line now, Billy? looks like your dotted line took you past a very, very unsavory Potter town, didn't it?
That's right. PJ keeps falling off of counters. That's like, but the only one who keeps coming up roses is Jeffy. It's like,
Well, it looks like, oh no, Billy's in the lead paint again. Well,
PJ, no, stop playing with the asbestos line. Just leave him. He's fine.
Hey, and the little caption underneath the circle says, I'm eating potato chips. He's eating paint chips. Take that, Billy.
Hey, for off the cuff, Brad, that wasn't bad. Nice work.
Maybe you can continue this.
Thanks for that
someday.
Side-handed comment, Dave. off the cuff and being slightly retarded yourself, Brad, that wasn't bad.
That's not at all what I meant. I meant off the cuff for being a family circuit. Never mind. What cartoonist would you be if your response just triggered this? If you were in the 1950s, would you be a magazine cartoonist? Would you be a strip cartoonist? Would you be an editorial cartoonist? What do you think you would have been in the 1950s?
Okay, let me think about that, because each like one of them has their
aspects. You have your options of like New Yorker or, you know, Saturday Evening Post, you know, kind of single strip or non-paneled comic.
That's a good question. I feel like
you've got adventure strips, but also as a possibility in the 50s.
That's true. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of, it seemed like there was more not variety, because there's variety now, but there was more of a safety in which you could do those things. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe that's rose-colored glasses.
Now, what do you mean safety? I don't see what you mean.
Well, it's just that you could – nobody would deal with the stuff that we're dealing with now, where people ask us about, what about long form? What about a serious story that I want to tell? And we say, well, there's not necessarily traction for that. Like, you could get something like an adventure strip that was in the paper. Whereas now, if you wanted to do an adventure strip, it's like, well, no, you wouldn't do that. It would be humor. You'd have to do humor, mm-hmm. right?
Well, yes.
Is anybody pitching
a lot of people on
webcomics.com
that'll tell you that long form is it is possible to get traction on the web for long form, but it's definitely a different beast.
Yeah, I don't see anybody pitching a Rex Morgan equivalent to now.
Right, right.
Like, I've got a great drama story that can only be told three panels a day.
Well, you know, one thing I would see, I came to cartooning originally wanting to be a political cartoonist. That was like the first thing that really caught fire with me. Maybe comic book guy was first, but when I was in college, it was all about the political cartoons. And I think I might have been somewhat tempted to be a political cartoonist in the 50s for the sheer reason that the politics was just as spirited and just as passionate, but you could actually have a discussion about politics without falling victim to this polarizing, vicious mentality that politics has today. Back in the 50s, there was a such thing as a conservative Democrat and a liberal Republican. Those were actual creatures that existed on the political landscape. And it was a lot – you could have a disagreement and an argument and then crack open a beer and everything was okay. Today, you know, you're either an un-American or you're a freaky hippie, you know, lefty pinky liberal.
Right.
And it's impossible to have a lighthearted, fun discussion about politics because you walk away bruised and bloodied. So I might be a political cartoonist in the 50s.
Well, yeah, I see where you're saying, broadly speaking, as far as politics in the 50s. And that, yeah, but we did. We also did have the House Un-American Committee in the 50s, didn't we? Wasn't that
right? What I'm talking about, though, is that period in the 50s right after that.
Oh, okay. But no, no. No, but even me playing contrarian, even me playing contrarian, I know what you mean, though, is that there was you could still have a conversation back then. It seemed like, even if that, like, again, even if that's rose-colored glasses, it's what it seems.
Yeah, I was
like.
Going to say, your point is well taken. The good old days maybe weren't always as good as they seem.
But yeah, I think there was also. For editorial cartooning, I think it also, more importantly, still had an impact back then. Like, I don't know that it. I don't know that it achieves anything anymore. I don't know that it's. If its aim is to change people's minds or to influence policy, I don't know that an editorial cartoon succeeds anymore. I can't think of one where it's like people went, "Well, wait a minute, I'm going to change my opinion now." You know.
Well, yeah, because I mean, the main source of getting your news at that point was still the newspaper. Television hadn't really taken over, although it was just about to. And this would have been the earlier 50s, I guess. But you know, it was the main stage for that kind of discourse, and that therefore, if you wanted to be, if you were interested in the news, you picked up a newspaper and you read the political cartoonist, whether you agreed with his slant or not, you were exposed to him automatically. Whereas today, I think the thing that has killed political cartooning, other than the polarized atmosphere, is the fact that on the web. The only reason to go to a political cartoonist's website is if you agree with his politics. And if you agree with his politics, his stuff gets really old real quick.
Right. There's no fire in the belly about it. Yeah.
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 So, Chris, what would you have been in 1950? What kind of cartoonist would you have been?
Well, I started out thinking, oh, I'll just do strip cartoonists. Like, I really like that aesthetic. But I think it would be really classy to be the New Yorker type of cartoonist with a single panel of the caption. But I can't see myself doing adventure. I can't see myself doing anything like that. Not editorial. It doesn't interest me.
Well, Scott and I had the conversation. There was a Jack Lemmon movie that I haven't seen, and I wish Scott was here. It's called How to Murder Your Wife.
Yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah,
a cartoonist, and he said this a couple times on Twitter and in different places, just how classy it would have been, or at least if you believe all the media that you see that reflects that, how classy it seems to have been a cartoonist during that era.
Oh yeah, you know? Well you were living the life, you know, you were a one man media machine, but as a cartoonist back then, like you were making good money, you know. Gabby Hayes money. So,
which brings us right back to hobos, which brings us right back to the beginning of the show.
That's right. there was one last point I wanted to make. Shoot, it was about the 50s, too, as a cartoonist. Dang, dang, dang.
Well, you know what? Let's hang on to it just because I know that Scott was super excited about this idea recently.
About being a cartoonist in the 50s?
Oh, yeah, no, about what the life of a cartoonist is now versus then. That's a great topic, like what it used to be.
Right, yeah. Like why would we look back at it and go, God, it would have been amazing to be it at that time.
Well, you know what? I'll just frame it a future discussion in this way, is that I don't know if I've shown it to you, but I bought an original for Bringing Up Father. It was a strip in the 30s and 40s, George McManus.
Really?
Yeah, so I bought one of the originals a little while back. And in framing it, I started to get really interested in his life. So I started doing research on it. And I found an old National Cartoonist Society register online that listed Walt Disney's address, George McManus's address. Like it was basically their Christmas list for if anybody wanted to mail anybody anything. Hmm. And it listed for George McManus three houses in L.A., one in Malibu, one in Hollywood, and one like kind of towards Santa Monica. And I was like, he owned three houses in the Depression in Los Angeles. And so I drove by one of them, and I can put a link up somewhere. I did it once before. And it's basically right on Sunset, beautiful view of all of Los Angeles. And it was clearly like a 4 or 5-bedroom house. Now it's a business, but like the dude had money in the Depression.
Wow.
You know, he was rich.
So wow. That's amazing.
It's a very different life now for cartoonists than it was back then.
Well, and again, bring the conversation full circle, you can kind of understand why some people in the traditional print comics take a look at what's happened in the landscape with a certain amount of scorn.
Sure, sure, yeah. Well, I think this is a whole other topic of conversation. Man, we're firing up a couple possible ones. But I think what's happening is what we're losing is we're losing the true upper tier careers. Penny arcade aside, we're losing the guys that could make 5, 10, 20 million a year. But we're gaining, broadly speaking, more people who will make a living, quote unquote, however you want to classify living in cartoons. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's opening up.
That's where I think broadly the change is, yeah. So for the people that were making $5, $10, $20 million a year in cartooning, they're like, well, this is unacceptable. I don't want to go back to making $60,000 a year, $70,000 a year, you know, that kind of thing. Right. And they're right. They're right in that regard. The older I get, especially, I'm like, well, I can't argue with that. You know, it's you're right. Anyway. No real capstone to that point.
Well, that kind of describes this entire podcast right now. So we open with a subject. We're like, I don't think we can do that. There's no solution to any of this.
we could just title this the Meandering episode.
We did get that one letter from somebody who had a couple ideas and then said, also, I knit to your podcast. It's great for knitting too. So if we provided 47 minutes, I hope you get that scarf done. It's going to look great.
We did get one. Who was it? Was that Chloe's email? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, I knit to the podcast. It is awesome knitting background noise. I forgot about that one.
That's all I'm shooting for now.
We got it. We got the knitting demographic.
You know, we should screw her up and just throw knit one pearl two randomly into our sentences to throw her off count.
Just the wrong.
It's just one of us. And so, to throw off her muscle memory, we're like over under 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 over 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 under, 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 under back over under over under. She's like nah.
No, don't do that. It's cruel.
You know, it is funny. You guys probably haven't gotten this one, but I think it was just sent to me. Whereas this podcast is excellent to knit to, it makes macrame impossible.
Webcomics Weekly.
Scott, come back. We need you.
Thanks for joining us.
All right, well, shall we wrap it up, gentlemen, by saying what a pleasure it's been. Yeah.